tripped in towards Lewandowski!
Magnificent from Cristiano Ronaldo!
Harry Kane, 1-0 England!
Ibrahimovic! Oh, he certainly made the most of that!
You're listening to the official UEFA Euro 2016 podcast.
Hello and welcome to the first show for UEFA Euro 2016. I'm Rob Daly. We'll be bringing you the latest from here in France throughout the tournament. Team news, talking points, results and games ahead. Plus, we're joined by the biggest names, including this week, England captain Wayne Rooney.
It's a huge honour to captain your country, and even more especially if you can do it in a successful tournament.
Carl Lafferty explains why the team spirit is so high in the Northern Ireland camp. Formula One superstar Sebastian Vettel tells us his best Euro memory, and we'll be speaking to our correspondents up and down the country right here on the official UEFA Euro 2016 podcast. You join us from our makeshift studio in Paris. Alongside me for the first show is UEFA.com correspondent Tom Kell. Tom, great to have you on the show.
Thanks, Rob.
And Chris Parrott is with us as well. Hello, Chris.
Hello. In the back end of the International Broadcast Centre, we've got our own hut here, and it looks good.
Tom, starting with you. We've been in Paris a few days now. How are you finding it? It seems excitement's building for the tournament now.
Yeah, I mean, I actually walked to the Eiffel Tower yesterday. We're not in the heart of the city here. You can feel the excitement even here, but the walk to the Eiffel Tower really felt, you know, you could tell that it was only a few days away. And I think some of the guys went yesterday and it really feels like it's getting closer now.
Yeah, absolutely does. Chris, is there any game that you're particularly excited about for match day one, for the first round of games?
I think the day when England play Wales and Germany play Poland stands out. They are probably the two outstanding games of the group stage, and they happen to be on the same day. Also looking forward to Turkey-Croatia here in Paris. Can't forget that match 8 years ago now when they played in the quarterfinal, and that's a very competitive group, and that game in Paris, I'm sure the colour, the noise of those two sets of fans will be brilliant.
Yeah, we'll be talking about that more later as well. Tom, you know, you were talking about the atmosphere in France, and we're seeing the front page of L'Equipe on all the newsstands here in Paris. Do you get a sense that they feel they're the favourites, that they are the favourites of the tournament?
I think there's a Parisian cool about the excitement.
That's a good way to put it.
There's nobody jumping in the streets, but I think that they, you know, speaking to some of the locals, I think in 1998, for example, the excitement built as the tournament went on. So I expect them to get out of the group, no problem. And I think after that, we'll really see the locals really showing what they think.
Is there any real player who you think's going to start this tournament? We'll ask you first and then Chris.
You know, aside from the obvious ones, I was thinking the other day about Mario Gomez, and as you do. And I think he's sort of gone under the radar.
He's got a great haircut, Tom, so it's understandable.
Great haircut, yeah. I think he's gone under the radar. You know, at the end of the day, he's playing up front for Germany. A lot of people suggesting they haven't got a good enough striker. Well, he's going to get plenty of service. I'm expecting him to score goals. He may not be spectacular, but I'm expecting him to be a real goal scorer. Thomas Müller is a lot of people's favourites for the top scorer, yeah. But I think Gomez is going to be the one that's going to surprise a few.
Yeah, he should get a fair bit of game time. Chris, young players in particular, or any player you're really going to be keeping an eye out for?
Yeah, I think another striker, Arkadiusz Milik from Ajax. Again, you mentioned Müller. Everyone will look at him ahead of Gomez. I think the same with Lewandowski. But Milik scored 6 goals in qualifying. He got 6 assists, the joint most, and their partnership is brilliant. And if Poland are going to do anything in France, you would think that Milik and Lewandowski...
I mean, given the talent they have up front, could you see them... I could see them having a good run to the quarters or something. Like
yeah,
that.
I think so. I'd expect them to get out of the group. They've never won a game at the European Championships, though, which is an amazing thing, yeah. But you have to think with those two. I mean, they were fantastic in qualifying. He's been brilliant for Ajax.
OK, we'll be hearing from Wayne Rooney shortly on the show, but let's start by focusing on Belgium against Italy.
Follow UEFA Euro 2016 on the go.
Not convincingly cleared, and there's Müller. Wouldn't you just know it?
It is Bale. It's a second for Wales.
Download the official app now.
Okay, so the Atturi come into this tournament knowing that Antonio Conte won't be in charge after the competition. It's already been announced that Giampiero Ventura will take over from Conte after the championships. The former Sampdoria, Napoli and Udinese boss has been given a two-year deal to lead them to the FIFA World Cup in Russia. But it's all about this tournament now, Chris, and one that people are saying doesn't necessarily have a real great out-and-out striker up front.
Antonio Conte has admitted as much in a press conference a couple of weeks ago, didn't he, when he said, we haven't got the best squad Italy have ever had. And I think he's right. It's not Inzaghi or Del Piero or any of those other great Italian strikers.
So who they think is actually going to play up front then?
Probably Graziano Pella of Southampton and right. Eder. Again, on paper, maybe there's five or six teams in this tournament who have better strikers.
Neither of those are regular for their clubs at the back end of the season either.
Indeed. Pella was, Shane Long was playing for Southampton ahead of him. He's quite a streaky striker. But what they do have is a fantastic defence. They have that Juve 4, Bonucci, Chiellini, Barzagli and Buffon. So it's always been the strength of Italian football, defend very well, and they could go far in the competition, but I think Conte's right. It will have to be the collective strength, and for me, they're definitely not one of the favourites.
I mean, you saw Belgium, who probably would be considered one of the favourites in a friendly before we arrived in Paris.
Yeah, last week against Finland, they only drew. They beat Norway in their last friendly before this tournament. The expectation is enormous because this is the golden generation of Belgian players, no doubt. They've never won a major competition. You go through their team, they must be the most expensive transfer fee-wise country here. I don't think there's anybody else which is even close to them. Mark Wilmots is, I think because of that, under a bit of pressure. Yes, they made the quarterfinals in the World Cup 2 years ago, but his main decision seems to be at the back. Company is out injured, of course. He's going to start Alderweireld and Vertonghen, who have been outstanding for Tottenham, at fullback. And it's going to be Jason Denayer, the Manchester City player who's on loan at Galatasaray, and Thomas Vermaelen, who hasn't played much for Barcelona, at centre-half, which is an interesting call. I don't think Vertonghen and Alderweireld are natural fullbacks. And
they can do a job there.
But my word, they can do a job at centre-half. Together we saw that with Spurs. So I think that will be interesting to see how that goes on. He also tends to play two holding midfielders.
So you're expecting a cagey first game then?
I am. I wouldn't be surprised if it's not, if there's one goal or no goals.
Don't say that. I'm going to that game.
Exactly.
I'm hoping for lots of goals.
I just feel that they're probably the two favourites to go through from the group, and it might be the case of how much do we lose as opposed to how much do we gain.
Tom, at the back end of the season, I suppose one of the saving graces for Belgium was Eden Hazard, who finished the season so strongly for Chelsea, having been largely peripheral and not in form.
It's funny you say that, Rob. I was actually thinking that I expect him, he's just peaking at the right time. Mm. Really, really disappointing season. Scored quite a few goals at the end of the season. And I think, despite all Belgium's talent, he's their main man. He's got to be. He's a virtuoso performer. You know, I think he's really going to provide plenty of opportunities for everyone. But Belgium, as you say, golden generation. I hope Mark Wilmots has been on the phone to Sven-Göran Eriksson, who had England's very own. I expect them to go out, get to the quarterfinals and go out on penalties, because that's what happened to England.
We'll work out who Belgium's derisive cell is later on in the show. Tom, on to the Republic of Ireland against Sweden. Ireland lost all three of their group games when they appeared in the tournament 4 years ago. Martin O'Neill signed a new contract this week to 2018 as well. Going into this game against Sweden with an informed Ibrahimovic, can you see the Republic getting out of their group?
I don't think the Irish fans are going to mind either way. They had a good time 4 years ago regardless.
They did, yep.
I don't think they will. I think they've really got their work cut out. I don't think they've got the firepower. I think there'll be a Martin O'Neill team. They'll be well organised. They'll be compact. They'll go for it when they need to. But I just don't think they're going to have the goals. I really don't.
And I mean, it seems they've settled on Shane Long as their main striker now, which took a while to decide, it seemed, anyway.
Yeah, I mean, he probably sums them up, really, doesn't he? He's a willing runner. He's got the odd bit of quality, but probably not consistent enough, I don't think, to beat the teams in that group. I'm not sure they're going to get enough.
But they did beat the world champions, and one win might get you through to the round of 16. Germany, Ukraine, we have the world champions, of course, Tom, in the tournament. Anthony Rudiger's pulled out the squad. He probably would have started the first game. Jonathan Tah, the young Leverkusen defender, replaces him. How do you see the shape of this Germany team? You were talking about Mario Gomez earlier as well.
I think there's probably more uncertainty about the team than there would usually be for a Germany team.
Yeah, that's fair, yeah.
I think they normally go into tournaments pretty with a set starting 11. And speaking to the German office the other day, and they were saying, you know, there's problems at fullback. They're not sure who's going to replace Royce. I think Draxler is expected to, but there's a fair bit of uncertainty.
Okay, yeah.
They're going to get out of the group, aren't they? I expect to see them in the latter stages. I think they're going to have enough goals, enough quality, and then we'll see how they get on when they meet the best late on.
Yeah, I'd agree. And I think the fact that there is maybe more uncertainty about Germany, it goes back to that there isn't one massive favourite, I don't think, for this tournament.
No,
full stop.
No.
France are probably most people's, if you asked, but I think that's the great thing. It's been Spain for the last couple of European Championships. They're, of course, in the mix, and we'll discuss them, but I don't think there is one absolute team that you'd say it would be a... It would be a surprise if they didn't make the final, for example. I think it's pretty open.
Let's hear from Formula One superstar Sebastian Vettel. I bet you weren't expecting to hear his name on the podcast, Chris.
Is he not preparing for this weekend's Grand Prix?
Well, he's taken a little bit of time out to give us his best Euro memory.
I have 1996 in the back of my mind. The golden goal scored by Oliver Bierhoff, if that's correct. At least I have that in my memory. It was very dramatic, and I think at that point Matthias Sammer had more hair. That's what I can recall.
Matthias Sammer did have more hair. It's a good memory.
He was a very good centre-half as well.
It's a heartbreak for anyone who supports England. That was a heartbreaking tournament. Wasn't it, Tom? That was a killer for England fans.
Euro 96 was probably my best and worst summer, to be honest with you. I've got great memories of being in the garden pretending to be Shearer, but I've also got great memories of hiding behind the sofa crying after we lost to Germany. I was 10 that summer, so...
Yeah. It was a tough one. Poland, meanwhile, play Northern Ireland in the same group as Germany and Ukraine. Karl Lafferty, well, they're hoping he's fit, picked up a knock in training, so he is a doubt. Michael O'Neill has hinted that he'll be OK for the group stage, and it's vital he can feature, having played such a crucial role in qualifying.
Lafferty. It's Kyle Lafferty now for Northern Ireland. Lafferty makes it two! Northern Ireland break at pace, and Kyle Lafferty keeps up his record of having scored in each and every one of Northern Ireland's qualifiers so far.
We've had such a good squad. Things happen on a pitch. If someone makes a mistake, that some players are a bit of a shout at each other. But once that final whistle goes, they're the best pals after. But maybe before, it's carried on to the dressing room, and there's an argument in the dressing room. There's not that anymore. Even for the young players that came in, they've felt at home straight away. The lads, the older players, has made the team welcome. There's probably been a prank or two behind it, but it's a way of letting them know that they've been welcomed into the squad. And everyone just wanted the same thing. There's no individuals that wanted something different. To go out and make a name for themselves. Every single person wanted the same thing, and I got even stronger when it became a reality that we could actually qualify, that we could actually go there and qualify for a major tournament. This group of players, no one else, no one outside this group, this is the group that's going to try and qualify, and that's played a massive part in qualifying.
Chris, he hasn't played much this season, Carl Lafferty. He didn't get a look in at Norwich. He went out to Birmingham, I think, for a brief spell. But if he can't play, they've lost their main man up front.
They have, and he was so crucial in qualifying. They'll desperately hope he is fit. I think they've got the longest unbeaten run of any team coming into this one, Northern Ireland.
Yeah, 11 or 12 games,
yeah,
isn't it?
Which is, I mean, it's been said a lot, I know, but it's an amazing achievement to have got here. Now they're here, I think they're in a very difficult group. Poland, Germany and Ukraine, they're fourth favourites, but they were probably fourth favourites when the group stage draw was made, you know, for their qualifying section. So they'll hope that Stephen Davis, who was outstanding in qualifying, can continue his form from Southampton at the end of the campaign. But if Lafferty isn't fit, you really worry where the goals would come from.
Carl Lafferty is the kind of player for me I am desperate to see do well at this tournament, for no particular reason. He's a journeyman striker, he's unglamorous. He I'd love to see him just bang in three or four from 5 or 6 yards in the group stage. And Northern Ireland, the kind of team who've benefited more than anyone from 24 teams reaching the tournament.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is an opportunity that perhaps they might not have had previously. They'd never say it, but I think the players are just, they're delighted to be here. Obviously, they're going to want to get out of the group, but they're going to have a great time, and make no mistake that the supporters are going to have a great time as well.
Oh, they are, yeah, absolutely.
I was just going to say that you mentioned the Republic of Ireland fans. Well, when the Northern Ireland fans are in town, yeah, it should be pretty exciting, pretty loud, and particularly, I think, when they play Germany in Paris, their last group game, if they can go into that with something to play for, That could be one of the best atmospheres in the group stage.
Yeah, I mean, you were talking about the Republic of Ireland there, Chris, as well, who know full well about Poland, having been beaten by them at the back end of the qualifying campaign, and Robert Lewandowski in particular. Has been outstanding for Bayern this season, one of the top strikers in the world, obviously. He puts down an unusual practice method to the way he can break through defences.
He does. An interview with UEFA.com. Practices with his dog.
Yeah, I don't. I saw this. I don't really understand. So how does he practice with his dog?
So basically, he's got a boxer dog, and and the dog takes the ball off him, and he tries to run around the dog, and the dog chases him. I would love to see it, just like one of the world's greatest strikers in his backyard, just with his dog running around with a ball.
Forget all the fancy technology.
Yeah. Don't worry about that. All, you know, and the nutrition. Just go out with your dog and practice.
Excellent.
Works for Lewandowski.
It does. It can surely work for the best. Now let's talk about England next. We'll hear from Wayne Rooney very shortly. But first, let's hear from UEFA.com's correspondent based with the team, Laura James. I caught up with her earlier.
They're based in Chantilly, which is about 40 minutes northeast of Paris. Very, very nice part of the world. Very, very quiet. But they're not completely isolated. They've got a team hotel just off the end of a high street in a small in the small town of Chantilly. And Roy Hodgson's been out, fluent in French as he is, greeting locals, shaking their hands, having a chat. The players certainly are not on lockdown. There is a little bit of freedom, which I think is a good thing.
You saw them arrive and you've seen some training as well. How's the squad looking? Chris Smalling was like the major injury concern.
Yeah, we were on tarmac for their arrival. Novak Djokovic actually departed in private jet 15 minutes before their arrival. So, yeah, it was quite a colourful occasion. And they got a really nice reception when they arrived at the hotel ahead of their first open training session. They were serenaded by some local children who did a rendition of God Save the Queen. It was really nice, actually. You asked about Smalling. He returned from that training session with his knees strapped up and iced, and there was a question mark over whether he would be fit, but the FA have said it's nothing to be concerned about.
How do you think England are going to set up for that first game with Russia? Because there's a lot to talk about whether England go with the front two with Vardy and Kane. What you suspecting is going to happen?
Yeah, really good question in terms of Rooney. You know, is he going to be out on the left? Is he going to be in the centre of midfield? Where is he best deployed? I think in his sort of traditional position, you know, he's great physical presence. He's really, really strong on the ball. Whether somebody like Sterling offers a bit of pace, lots of question marks, and they're all going to be answered after the first game, hopefully.
What do you sense the mood is in the England camp? Because they've been doing a few interviews ahead of their first game.
Really relaxed, very relaxed. Right. Gary Cahill and Roy Hodgson spoke to me as soon as they got off the plane, and they were all smiles, very, very easy going. All the lads going onto the bus looked very happy and relaxed, because it's such a young side. It's the youngest team in this competition, and certainly the youngest team England have ever taken to a major finals. And I think there's a great energy and enthusiasm among the youngsters there, and I think they're going to really enjoy this summer.
Unlikely that we're going to see too much of Marcus Rashford, should we think, ahead of the tournament?
Probably not. It's an amazing opportunity for him, and he's had this incredible ascent to fame at club level as well. But I think it's too ambitious to say he'll get a start.
And is it exciting to be around the England team ahead of a major tournament as well?
It's just indescribable what it's like to be at UEFA Euro 2016. It really is incredible, the amount of colour. Interestingly enough, France, England, there's a great rivalry there, but the French have been so welcoming of the English team, and I think, you know, they do see them as the new generation, and they do want England to be proud of their youngsters, and, you know, I think it's really strong.
Laura James there, one of UEFA.com's England correspondents for the tournament, and we'll catch up with her after the Russia game. Tom, how do you think England are shaping up going into this one? We talked with Laura there about the dilemma in attack with Rooney, Kane, Vardy, Sterling even, who impressed when he came in against Portugal. How would you be playing it?
I think it's a tricky one for Hodgson. There's no doubting probably his best players, but how to fit them in to the lineup
is
very difficult. There's absolutely no way that he's not going to play Wayne Rooney. He's captain. He's got about five times more goals than the rest of the squad combined in international football. Harry Kane is his number one striker. So those two, guaranteed. Jamie Vardy, he's had a phenomenal season, but is he up to international football? Who knows? We've only seen him three or four times, I think, play for England. I think he'll start with all three in the first game. I think he's probably acutely aware that the defence aren't as strong as the attack, so probably the opposite to Italy. Score more goals than the opposition rather than try and keep them out of the other end.
Yeah, exactly. For Wayne Rooney, by the way, this is his sixth major tournament in an England shirt. And remember, England didn't qualify for UEFA Euro 2008. But now he's captain as well, and it has been quite a ride for the Manchester United star.
Wayne Rooney, England captain. I'm a footballer. It happened quick. I remember playing Victory Shield not long before that, and then, you know, all of a sudden I was playing for the first team, and it's, I think football sometimes, is, you get chances and you have to take it. You have to be ruthless in terms of taking the chance you get given, because you might never get that chance again, and I knew that, and I felt that, but I think importantly I had the belief and the confidence in my own ability to feel that I felt part of that, and I think that stood me in good stead when I got into the England squad, into the Everton squad, then England squad, sorry, and I believed that I was I should be there, and I was comfortable there, and I didn't want to go back to playing youth football. That was where I felt I belonged.
It's Michael Owen setting it up.
Played well in the tournament, it was enjoyable, and unfortunately I broke my foot at the end of the tournament, and it ended in heartbreak for myself, but also for the country going out on penalties. So I think it was a tournament where the fans believed we could actually go on and win it, and the players, we also had that belief, and you know, I think I was playing so well without fear at that time that I believe if I didn't get injured, then we would have a great chance to come to it.
Rooney, 50! England's top scorer of all time.
Yeah, I look back more at that when I finished playing, but it's something I'm proud to achieve, and you know, for a record which has stood so long for England, is to be the one to actually break that record is a special feeling. It's a huge honour to captain your country, and to do it in a major tournament is great. Something, you know, I'm excited for and looking forward to do. But it'll obviously be even more special if you can do it in a successful tournament, which, you know, we're all hoping for, and that's what we've worked so hard for over the last 2 years to try and do.
Wayne Rooney speaking there, and he certainly had a better second half of the season with Manchester United, England's top scorer in qualifying. They take on Russia, Chris, and it was interesting. I saw Lenny Slutsky's interview with UEFA.com, and he was asked by one of our correspondents, you know, what do you know about England? And he just said, everything. So they've clearly done their homework. But we know a lot about Russia, and their main concern is injuries, particularly in midfield.
Yeah, lost two huge players, two of their starting 11, Igor Denisov and Alan Zagoyev. Big blows. You know, Zagoyev has long been the golden boy. It might mean that Alexander Golovin, who's a very young player who plays with Slutsky at CSKA Moscow.
Yeah, Slutsky's the head coach of a club and,
exactly,
and country. Yeah.
And Golovin is now the new Zagoyev, if you like. I'd expect him to start. I think their issue, particularly against England, might be at the heart of defence. Sergei Ignashevich and Alexei Berezutsky are almost 70 between them. They're two very wily, very good centre-backs, don't get me wrong, but they're not blessed with great pace. Maybe Sterling will play as well. I think if England can get at that back too, they'll get a lot of joy. Heard from Artem Zuba, who said that he thinks the main weakness from England will be Rose and Walker pushing forward, which is interesting. So maybe Russia will try and exploit that space. But for me, England are definitely favourites going into that game in Marseille.
Also in Group B with England is another home nation. Wales take on Slovakia, a Slovakia side that qualified largely down to the brilliance of Marek Hamsik, their Napoli playmaker. How do you see Wales getting on in that game?
I think Wales will start well. Gareth Bale had a very good season, but I think this season he's really shown himself that he's there for the long haul. I think him and the defence as well, Ashley Williams, very underrated player. I don't think it's all about Gareth Bale. Wales are going to be pretty solid. And yeah, I think they're going to start with a win, certainly. And then it's on to England after that, which is a different ball game.
Yeah, absolutely is. Okay, let's turn our attention to other games at UEFA Euro 2016.
For the latest news from inside the team camps, go to Euro2016.com.
Okay, you're listening to the official UEFA Euro 2016 podcast with me, Rob Daly, Tom Kell and Chris Parrott alongside me. Let's talk about Iceland, Tom, the smallest nation at the championships. I think we've all got a stat on this country, right? So we're going to try and outstat each other. You up for that?
No, I haven't got any stats, Rob.
I've seen your notepad. I know that you've got some stuff there. So here's my one. Iceland, with a population of 330,000 people. If it was a city in France, it would only be the 28th largest in the country. Is that a good one?
Well, you tell me. Funnily enough, actually, Iceland applied for around 27,000 tickets. I'm not sure if this was at the end of the process, but I certainly read this at one point. And that is 8% of the whole population.
The 8% of the whole country leaving for the tournament.
That is correct.
Chris, have you got one better than those two?
I really like that one. I mean, is there going to be anybody left in Iceland? Sparsely populated anyway. They're playing one of their games at the Stade de France, and yes, a quarter of their entire population can fit, could not just fit in the ground, could be in the seats in the stadium, 80,000.
Oh, so if we had four Stade de France's,
yeah,
we could easily, I don't think that's the right way to say that, but we could get everyone in.
Everyone from Iceland could fit in four Stade de France's.
Well, they're warmly invited to join us. They do have Gylfi Sigurdsson, who's been in fine form in qualifying with six goals, but they take on a Portugal side, Tom, they come into this in a relatively decent form.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned Gylfi Sigurdsson. He's my outside bet for the tournament. He's someone that I think just seems like the kind of player that's going to get some goals.
Yeah, it does, yeah.
Portugal, I don't think it's any great revelation that they've got someone that might be quite dangerous up front. But looking at the group, it's perhaps not the strongest of the six groups. And I think if they get off to a good start, Portugal, they may even be able to think about resting Ronaldo. You know, one win in the opening game, they're already going to be looking at getting through to the next stage.
Because there was maybe a sign of fatigue at the back end of the season and in the UEFA Champions League final with Ronaldo.
They've got a decent defence, but Ronaldo is going to be the key. So if they can keep him fresh, you know, they don't want to be too overconfident, but if they can keep him fresh for the latter stages, then I think they've got a great chance, yeah.
We'll be speaking to Johan, our correspondent with the Iceland team, on an upcoming podcast. Chris, the other game in the group, Austria-Hungary. It's a very open group, this one. Austria take on Hungary in their game. I mean, Iceland fancy their chances to get through this.
Yeah, I actually wonder if Austria might have a decent competition, qualified for the European Championships for the first time. They've been here as co-hosts before, but I think they've got some very good players. Janko's a goal scorer. We all know about Alaba at Bayern.
He'll be playing in midfield.
Exactly. Arnautovic on his day, the Stoke City player in the Premier League, gives some fantastic one-line quotes and things like that. But I think Austria, for me, are probably second favourites. But as you mentioned, Tom said it's not the strongest group on paper, which I think is true. But what it does mean for those three countries, Iceland, Austria and Hungary, is it gives them a really, really good chance of getting through to the round of 16.
Okay, let's move on, and we're going to talk about the hosts next.
To keep up to date with the latest from UEFA Euro 2016, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or follow us on SoundCloud.
Okay, joining us now to work through France's prospects is our correspondent following the team, David Crossan. So, David, where are you and where's that France team?
I'm at Rambouillet at the moment, which is about a 10-minute drive from the National Training Centre at Clairefontaine out in the forest. The French team are going to be moving over to Bercy ahead of the game, and the expectations are sky high here.
What's the mood in the camp? It seems anyway. I was reading L'Equipe on Wednesday morning that it's very united, and certainly you were saying anyway that they've been having a lot of fun before the tournament starts.
Yeah, they're very relaxed, but they see this as a chance to create history on home soil, do what their predecessors did in 1984. And it is as relaxed as I've seen a French squad since I've been covering the national team over the last decade or so.
What have the players been getting up to? I saw that Pogba has a rather bizarre new haircut with Pog Boom in the back of his head.
He enjoys football, and I think that's something that the French are going to have to cling on to when the pressure kicks in. They all love playing with the ball. They love being around each other. And so when the big kickoff happens against Romania, they need to still treat it as a game and enjoy themselves on the field, that the likes of Pogba and Griezmann need to express themselves if France are going to go far in this tournament. Pogba just can't help himself. On Monday, there was the open training session, and those players who'd started against Scotland in the 3-0 win in the last tune-up match on Saturday were meant to be doing warm-down exercises, But there he was in the centre circle, juggling the ball, knocking 50-yard passes with either foot out to Bakary Sagna. And he was just having a great time in front of the fans in the sunshine.
You mentioned Pogba and Griezmann. It's a France squad packed full of quality. What's the general mood within the country? Is there an expectant that they can go all the way? Maybe they should go all the way.
They're definitely one of the teams that should be competing. I think it'll be a major disappointment were they to fail to reach the semi-finals, at least given the talent that's within the squad. There are concerns from fans about the defence because they conceded an average of 2 goals per game in their 3 friendlies before the Scotland game when they managed a clean sheet. And there have been a lot of players unavailable either through injury, through Raphael Varane and Jeremy Mathieu and even Kurt Zouma, and also from suspensions in terms of Mamadou Sakho. So Adil Rami's come back in to the defence after a long absence, and him and Laurent Koscielny are still working on their understanding at the back. The clean sheet against Scotland will have helped them, but it's going forward that the French fans are getting really excited. I mean, when you've got Payet, who's playing as well as he's ever played, and Griezmann and Pogba and Matuidi in your ranks, and Olivier Giroud, who's scored 7 in 7, you've got to fancy your chances.
So it looks like Rami at centre-back alongside Koscielny, and we think Payet's going to start, right, David?
Yeah, we do. We do think that Dimitri Payet's going to start ahead of Anthony Martial. That Didier Deschamps has been really impressed with Payet, who's just playing for his country now with the confidence that he showed at West Ham throughout the Premier League season. And Payet's ability from set pieces, scoring direct from free kicks and setting up goals from corners and free kicks will be invaluable to the French, who have had problems defensively from set pieces. The reason that Rami has come in rather than Mangala, who was named in the original party, or Samuel Umtiti, who was on the reserve list when Rami wasn't. Rami was picked ahead of Umtiti, and Umtiti came in when Mathieu called off, is so that Laurent Koscielny can still play as the left-sided centre-back. I think that's something that's often neglected when fans and journalists are talking about the defence, that people just assume that centre-halves are interchangeable. But Deschamps wanted to minimise the number of alterations so that Koscielny plays in his preferred position and Rami slots in on the right-sided central half position.
And what's the thoughts on Romania? They barely conceded any goals during the qualifying campaign. Is that how the journalists and the fans are thinking, that they might be hard to break down?
I think it's how the players are thinking as well. The players are expecting Romania to sit back. And we heard Viorel Moldovan, who's going to coach in France at Auxerre in the second division next season, who's assistant coach to Iordanescu at the moment, saying that they hope to use the fact that Evra and Sagna go forward a lot, the French fullbacks, to try and get in behind. But the French team definitely expect Romania to sit back, and they'll have to try to break them down.
David, I think back to when there was so much expectation on France going into the 2002 World Cup as defending European champions and world champions, and they lost that opening game to Senegal. No fears that a similar upset could occur this time around?
I think the major challenge will be if Romania do manage to get a first goal early on Friday, because that will change the mood in the Stade de France, and that will be a test of the character of the players and indeed of the supporters should that happen. There are fewer things going around in terms of injured players. That was a big problem in 2002. Deschamps was keen to avoid that at all costs, which is why he was really pleased when Lassana Diarra stepped forward and said, no, my knee means that I can't be part of this team. And Morgan Schneiderlin came into the squad. And not having that distraction is going to help the French. It's a youngish squad. It's the first time that they'll have gone into a competition as among the favourites. And so they'll have to produce.
David, thank you so much for coming on the first podcast. Will you come on again throughout the course of the tournament?
Absolutely.
Beat the best with Euro Fantasy. Pick your team now at eurofantasy.uefa.com.
So France are in Group A. Along with them as well is Albania and Switzerland, who meet in their first group game on match day one. Tom, and a pair of brothers will actually be playing against each other in that fixture. And there's quite a few sets of brothers at the tournament.
There's 4, actually, Rob. That first game, Albania-Switzerland, will be Talant and Granit Xhaka.
It's a lovely pronunciation there.
Thanks, Rob. It's not my first time. also at the tournament will be Belgium's Jordan and Romelu Lukaku, Northern Ireland's Corrie and Johnny Evans, and Russia's Vasily and Alexei Berezutsky.
So that'll be interesting to see how Albania do in their first UEFA Euro 2016 as well. We have the holders as well, Tom, and it's easy to forget that Spain are the defending champions of this tournament, given how difficult they found the FIFA World Cup in Brazil 2 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, that's obviously, it's not going to have any bearing. It's some of the same players, obviously, but I think there's a new feeling about this Spain squad now. It's not the one that won three tournaments back-to-back anymore. It's a slightly different feel about them. They did lose their last friendly, 1-0 to Georgia.
Yeah, how would that affect, because Georgia are outside the top 100, I think, in the FIFA World Rankings. Would that affect them too much?
I don't think so, no. I think Spain are going to be fine. They've got far too much quality. Del Bosque knows exactly what he's doing. He's been there, done this. He's got plenty of experience in there. He's got, you know, in defence, he's got Piqué and Ramos. You know, they've been there, done it.
My only concern would be maybe the goals. Morata and Nolito, potentially. It's not a Torres, it's not a David Villa.
No, Nolito's been scoring, though, in the build-up to this.
Yeah, but, I mean, of course, everyone has to start somewhere. But in terms of a proven international-level striker, I know Morata's been excellent in the UEFA Champions League, but it's not a Villa or a Torres, and I just wonder if that means that they might not be quite as strong as they have been.
They had to make a couple of changes to their score. One of them, Hector Bellerin, coming in for the injured Danny Carvajal, and Isco didn't get selected. Lucas Vazquez into the squad, having finished the season quite strongly with Real Madrid, but they still have Iniesta in the middle, Tom, and he can certainly make them tick.
Yeah, I mean, he probably doesn't get mentioned as much as some of the other players. Everyone's, you know, talking about Lewandowski, Thomas Müller, Iniesta. It's so consistent, and he's been there for so long that people overlook it. Yeah. You know, he's still the best passer of a ball in the world. Surely he's the most creative midfielder there is. Make no mistake, he's going to still be pulling the strings for them.
There's one fixture left to cover, and that's in the same group as Spain. That's Group D, and that is Turkey against Croatia. And Chris, you can't help but think back to the quarter-final between these two sides. One of the most bizarre games in recent memory in the competition back in 2008.
First of all, I can't believe it's 8 years ago. One of the most uneventful 119 minutes of football ever seen at the European Championships. And then a crazy minute. I was actually alongside you, Rob, in Dubrovnik on holiday watching it. And I've never seen a football match which went from a group of supporters, a whole nation, from pure ecstasy to absolute despair.
Because Croatia scored in the 119th, exactly, and then Turkey equalised in the 120th. Yeah.
So Klasnic put Croatia ahead. First ever semi-final beckoned. They were a minute away. And Semisentuk then equalised. And you've never seen a team more desolate before.
You just knew they weren't going to win that shootout.
Exactly. Well, I mean, they were all on their backs. Where we were in Dubrovnik, it fell completely silent. And you almost wanted everyone to say, look, it's still a penalty shootout. It should be 50-50, but they were never going to win it. They didn't. Turkey in the semi-finals were beaten by Philipp Lahm's very late goal then. But I think that group is incredibly strong. Spain, Czech Republic, Turkey and Croatia. And that game, I think, between, I've already mentioned it in Paris, between Turkey and Croatia, to see who gets off to the best start will be great. And what a midfield on show. Rakitic, Modric, Calhanoglu. It's going to be a great watch.
I'm not sure why I wasn't invited to that holiday in Dubrovnik.
We'll invite you next time. To finish off the first podcast, we want your what you think might be a surprise result on match day one. So, Tom, we have all the fixtures on a wall chart in front of us that we're going to fill out like we're 10-year-old kids. So what do you see as a potentially surprise result?
I don't want to mention Carl Lafferty too many times, but I do have a feeling that Northern Ireland are going to get something against Poland. They're going to be so pumped, so ready for it. The support is going to be phenomenal. I expect them to get at least a point.
Yeah, they were very good defensively, actually, going into the tournament. Chris, your surprise result for match day one?
Just to follow up from Tom, if that happens, I hope Lewandowski scores because he's my captain in the fantasy game.
Oh, yeah, he's mine as well, yeah.
So, surprise result, I think the Czech Republic will get something from Spain. They might not beat them, but I think they might get a point in that game.
Okay, thanks, Chris. Thanks, Tom. Thank you very much for listening as well. We hope you've enjoyed the first official UEFA Euro 2016 podcast. We'll be back for the second round of games in France.
Thanks for listening to the official UEFA Euro 2016 podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to the show on iTunes or follow us on SoundCloud.